He scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, happy Monday, and welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Coming at you from the Hot Stove Lounge, deep in the bowels of the Dome. It's hour one. Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of Daily Hive, available wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Go ahead, subscribe. We'd love to have you along for the ride. If you're listening live on Sportsnet 960, the Fan, text line open to you at 960-960. If you're listening on demand, we've got lots to get to in hour number one. And just like that, we've got a couple preseason games in the books. The Flames, in fact, sweep a preseason split squad game with Vancouver. The one that we saw on Sunday night, 4-0 win for the Flames over the Vancouver Canucks here at the Dome. The one that was on Sportsnet at Rogers Arena in Vancouver saw the Flames take a 3-2 overtime win with Michael Stone scoring the overtime winner. We're going to focus more on the game we saw in person here at the Dome just because, you know, we've got a better book on that one. I saw parts of the game in Vancouver, but I feel far more comfortable and credible talking about the game that I saw with my own two eyes. It was nice. First of all, it was good to have things back at the Dome. Decent preseason Sunday night crowd. There's about, I don't know, probably 9,000-10,000 people in the building. It was just good to have preseason hockey back and start the march towards what is a very anticipated start of the regular season.
Yeah, you touched on the crowd, and I was actually surprised that we had as many people in attendance as we did watching warm-up, and, you know, as the game's starting to ramp up, the seats are looking pretty bare, and you're wondering, okay, it's a Sunday night, it's not too early, or sorry, pardon me, it's not too late in the night. What kind of crowd are we going to get? And, of course, all the construction and everything going outside the Saddledome. No real buzz going in. But once the puck dropped on the first period, you know, you're right, there's about 9,000-10,000 people. Good energy, good vibes, and a good way to kick things off if you're the Calgary Flames.
Going to just go rapid fire and touch on, maybe not rapid fire, but just throw a couple of different observations that you and I had brainstormed earlier in the day from what we saw on Sunday night here at the Dome. And I think the best place to start is with Jonathan Huberdeau, because he is the player, and this is with no disrespect to Mackenzie Weegar, who also made his Flames preseason debut, but with Huberdeau's season last year, with his 115 points, with the $84 million that the Flames committed to him, I think that right now Jonathan Huberdeau is the guy that people are most excited about, and I think that there's a buzz around him in this city. So to see him in Flames colors in game action for the first time was pretty cool. And to see him score the goal that was almost a highlight reel goal, it turned out not quite, but the intention was there. But he scored the goal. I thought he was involved. I thought that he was kind of all around it last night. He was definitely dynamic. I thought he was the best skater on either side last night. It was just, I thought it was, it's the preseason. You take everything with a grain of salt. It is not indicative of what we're going to see in the regular season. But with so much excitement surrounding that player, I thought it was cool to see him have a nice preseason debut with the team as well.
And for me, I thought he was just okay. He did the things that you would expect him to do. There's clearly some rust. There's clearly an adjustment period. I don't think he meshed nearly as well with Elias Lindholm and Tyler Toffoli as you'd hope, but again, it's only game
we
one
have a wet
of the
blanket, wet blanket alert, wet blanket alert.
I thought he tried to force too many passes, but you can see that the guy is an elite passer, if
it's
not
the first
the
game
elite
of the preseason.
And I'm saying that there's some chemistry that still needs to be built. There's some kinks that need to be ironed out. There's some rust that needs to be knocked off. But yes, Jonathan Huberdeau is an elite NHL player, and we saw a lot of that on the ice at the expense of a rather rookie-ish Vancouver Canucks lineup last night.
Yeah, I mean, what the Canucks brought was what the Canucks brought. I think that we expected them to bring a rather paltry roster, and they brought an even paltrier roster than we thought they were going to.
And this isn't just specific to Jonathan Huberdeau. I thought most of the Calgary Flames lineup had a bit of rust. It looked a little disjointed, as it would. Lots of power play time, lots of penalty killing time. So the game itself didn't feature a whole lot of flow. You can see that Jonathan Huberdeau is going to be an excellent fixture on the top line for the Calgary Flames for the next 9 years. We saw game one, which is technically not game one, but game one for Jonathan Huberdeau, scores his first unofficial goal. He tried to feed a, you know, almost a no-look pass through the low slot, through the top of the crease, hits something, comes back to him, taps it in the net. So not necessarily that highlight reel goal.
He was trying.
But it'll work.
But he still had the awareness to get the puck back and score. I just thought, look, this is not, I was sitting up there with Matty Rose and watching the game, and it's not Johnny. We're so used to, one of the things that jumped off the page to me was the Flames on the power play. I have just become accustomed to the number one power play unit entering the zone.
Yep.
90% of the time, the very same way. Set it up, backdrop, there's Johnny, head of speed, bam, because he's so good at zone entries, you know, one of the best in the NHL at doing it. You know, that was how they entered the zone on the power play and got set up. Well, Johnny Gaudreau is not here anymore, so they're not doing – it's not like they're like, oh, well, Jonathan Huberdeau's here. He's also a left winger. He's going to do the exact same thing. Well, no, they're different players. That's not to say that he's not skilled and shifty, but that's not Huberdeau's number one attribute. His number one attribute is his straight-up vision and how he's kind of like – Cale MacLean joined his postgame on the Flames Talk postgame on Sunday. And he made the analogy of, you know, when he gets the puck, most guys have one option, and Huberdeau's looking for three. And he's kind of like, remember when you're playing Madden and you got all the different reads?
Yep.
You know, he's like a quarterback. You know, he has his different reads and his different progressions, and he does it in that split second to make, like, he is an elite, elite playmaker. And I think we saw some of that. And we're going to see more of that as this continues with him in here in Calgary. He's played one official game, and it's still only a preseason game. But it's just, I saw some things. You're like, okay, this is how he's going to be used with the Flames. How he's going to be used on the power play. How he's going to help with the entry. What his primary role is going to be on that man advantage. And obviously, what he can do with Lindholm and Toffoli is going to take some time. I just thought there were a lot of things that said to yourself, yeah, okay, we understand why this guy is such a high-end player. We understand why the Flames committed $84 million to him. And I think knowing that it was a preseason game and knowing everyone was shaking off months and months of rust, it was a good way to start if you were in attendance and watching the game.
I'll give you that. There are a lot of good individual elements to his game, and you mentioned him being sort of a quarterback on that power play. He's not working the top, but he typically likes to work off his off wall. And you're right in the quarterback element, and he goes through his progressions. He looks at target one, he'll scan to target two, he'll look to target three, and then he'll go back to two or one if he doesn't like what three is, and just sets up the play that's going to be the most preferential given the situation. So there's definitely that element. Another element that I saw in his game last night, which I thought was pretty unique or different if we want to compare him to the former number 13, he was pretty physical out there for game one of a preseason match against, again, a team coming in that's lacking a lot of veterans. There was a shift where he finished three or four checks along the boards, and I went, well, he definitely is using this game to, yep, to get into a rhythm if he's going to be, you know, throwing the body around a little bit. And not crushing hits, but rubbing guys out or trying to separate guys from pucks. There are a lot of things individually. If you just look at Jonathan Huberdeau, that went really well last night. I just think that top line hasn't necessarily had enough time to mesh yet.
You know who I thought was the best player overall, though, on Sunday night?
Who's that?
Dan Vladar. Yep. I thought he was dialed. And a lot of times, goaltenders take a little while. I remember Mike Smith when he had the one good year with the Flames. He had the good year, then he had the bad year. But his first year, He looked awful in the preseason. He must have let in three bad goals his first preseason start, and people were like, oh, no, what have we done? And then he figured it out, and he was great for three quarters of his first season with the Flames before the injury hit. But a lot of times, goalies take a little time to get going in their first one or two preseason starts. You're like, eesh, that's a lot of rough goals that we're not used to seeing. Not with Vladar. 15 on 15. There were six or seven pretty high-quality chances. He made the 1 second period stop going post-to-post and probably made three or four in the first period that really got him into the game. I thought Vladar was really strong, and without putting too much stock into a preseason game, it just got me thinking about, I'm really excited for this guy in year two as a member of the Calgary Flames. And I think he's going to see more playing time. I don't think it's going to go from 23 games to 33 games, but I think you might see him go from 23 appearances to 25 or 26 appearances and just up it a little bit. But he, A, is such an easy guy to cheer for. We had him on live on the post game. It's just like the guy, I don't know how you can't be on his side regardless of who you cheer for. And number two, I think he's got some real potential and foundation to build on with what he accomplished in year one.
I can see a scenario where he sees a 15% bump in starts to try and spell Jacob Markstrom a little bit more, give Markstrom more time off in the regular season, see how the schedule unfolds. Of course, last year was so weird with the delays and the cancellations and then the rescheduling of games, so Jacob Markstrom could get longer stretches at certain times. But this year, I don't see that scenario happening. So Dan Vladar and his ability to come in, give the Calgary Flames quality starts is going to be key to making sure Jacob Markstrom's fresh, assuming we're talking about a playoff run, which I think everybody in this city assumes that this team is going to be a playoff team. Dan Vladar is going to be a big part of that in terms of giving Jacob Markstrom the due rest that he needs. And just look at last night. If he can come in and play 40 minutes and make, you know, you look at the shot volume, okay, 15 saves. It's not high. It's not low. I mean, it's a 20-ish some odd save night if you're extrapolating it over 60 minutes of action. But there were, for me, two or three grade A chances where Vladar not only made the save, but was completely square to the shot. Like, there was no panic. There was no last-ditch effort that he really needed to do. Part of that's because he's so big and tall, and he's got long limbs, so he can get those pads in the positions that he needs to. But when he was needed, which was few and far between for me, he was certainly there with a lot of calm, a lot of poise, and made a lot of stuff look easy last night.
So Vladar started 19 games last year. 15% bump gets him to about 22. And so that would get Markstrom's numbers down to about 60 starts.
I could even see 25 out of him.
So he made 23 appearances, 4 in relief, 19 starts. Yeah, I don't know if it goes from 19 to 30, but 19 to 23 or 24, somewhere in that range, yeah, I could see. And I think as much of that would be about, yeah, spelling Jacob off and maybe seeing if he can be a little bit more rested come postseason time, if you even thought that was an issue last year. But I think as much as anything else, it's also about Vladar's progression in the organization too. And I think last year the coaching staff lost a little, and Darryl lost a little trust in him there in the second half of the season where his game dropped a little bit and they really started to feed Markstrom those starts. I think part of that was because there was some trust lost in Vladar. And so I think there's a little bit of earning back going on right now. And it was a really nice start for Dan in his first preseason start. But yeah, if he can take a step forward, he finished last year with a 906. If he can be in the 910 to 914 range this year, I think he's going to, by merit, earn himself more starts. And it'll be less about Jacob's workload and more about just getting Dan more time because he's earning more time. I think they would have started him more if that trust kind of hadn't been thrown off a little bit in January, February.
Well, and keep in mind, too, in terms of goalie years, he's still young. He just turned 25 in August. He hasn't really played all that much. Like, he was a rookie last season by NHL metrics. He only had 5 games played coming into the 2021-22 season after being acquired by the organization from Boston. So this was really his first quote-unquote tour of duty as an NHL regular. So it's a big learning curve, especially for a goaltender who's facing NHL shooters regularly for the first time. So I do think that we see a bit more trust placed in him. I do think we see more starts placed on him. I can see that, you know, 25-game range being, I don't want to call it a goal, but a target perhaps that the Calgary Flames have for Dan Vladar.
A few texts at 960-960 about a couple of our observations from preseason game number one or number two, depending on how you look at it. Matt says Huberto looked fantastic, but nobody's talking about Eakin's contributions. He's my dark horse for making the roster. More on that in a second, Matt. This says, did it seem to you guys like Lindy and Toffoli didn't quite look ready for Huberto's passes? They came off the tape, or they come off the tape a lot differently than Gaudreau's. It'll take some time, in my opinion, but will be better in the long run. I think, and this is no knock on Johnny because he is a very gifted playmaker, but I don't know if there are very many players in the NHL that distribute the puck like Huberto does. Like he's kind of the... If Joe Thornton was that guy before, Joe Thornton will go down as one of the best playmakers, the best distributors, passers, however you want to describe it, in NHL history. I think he's passed the torch. I think that guy now is Huberto. You know, Johnny had a little bit more of the shiftiness and the phone booth and, you know, the elusiveness and then the passing on top of it. He was a very, very, an elite playmaker. But I think Huberto's I think Johnny's better in some areas, in other areas than Huberto is. And I think Jonathan's number one area that he excels in is just that ability to distribute the way that he does and to do it, the no-look passes and the accuracy and where he finds guys, all that type of stuff. So I do think there's probably a couple of times on Sunday night I was like, don't think he was expecting that pass because most guys wouldn't be able to thread that A or B, even have the vision or foresight to be able to think that was going to happen.
The other element to pay attention to here as well is you hear the term volume shooter a lot, where, you know, this is a player X is a guy that just gets pucks on net. He'll shoot from any angle. He'll shoot from anywhere on the ice. Jonathan Huberto, to me, is a volume passer, where he's always looking pass first. He will even sometimes try to force something that maybe, you know, the average person doesn't see there. Obviously, he sees something. But I think the sheer volume of passing that's going to come off the stick of Jonathan Huberto going to Toffoli or Lindholm, I think that's an adjustment for Toffoli and Lindholm to get used to, because you cannot be blue line in and not be expecting a pass from Jonathan Huberto, because you're going to end up whiffing, because that puck is definitely going east-west when Jonathan Huberto has it in the offensive end.
Chemistry thing is going to take some time, but man, Huberto's no drop-off from Gaudreau. I love it. This text on the goaltender says, give Wolf a couple of games if they have to. Otherwise, there's no you've got your two goalies in the NHL, and that's not a knock on Dustin at all. But if all things go according to plan, Dustin Wolf will play zero NHL games this year, and there is nothing wrong with that. He'll play, I don't know, 50 in the American League, 45, 50 in the AHL. That's that. If all things are equal and if all things play out ideally, there'd be zero, unless it's at the end of the year and you're kind of playing those final two or three games and you give Wolf a start in that regard. But in terms of meaningful games, I think that if you're a Flames fan, you're hoping for zero Dustin Wolf starts. Or maybe if you're a Flames fan, I'm not telling you what you should think. But I guess ideally for the Flames would be zero meaningful Dustin Wolf starts this year, because they want their goaltending tandem to stay healthy and be good all year long.
Yeah, there's no point in just gifting starts to Dustin Wolf. And like you said, if you've got two goalies that are Markstrom and Vladar and they're healthy for 82 games, there's no reason to just, hey, we just want to give this guy a shot. Unless you're at the end of the season, you're resting one, you want the other one to just back up. It's quote-unquote meaningless game in the standings. There's nothing really on the line. That's when maybe you see a Dustin Wolf. But just to be, let's squeeze Dustin Wolf into two, three, four, five games, it's not the time. It's not the place for it in my mind.
It's hard to cheer for Vladar when I'm a Luke Skywalker fan. I'm blocking that texter. You're blocked for life. I'm just kidding.
Is that all it takes?
That was just a bad pun.
Star Wars
pun. I quite enjoyed it, actually. I was just kidding. And then somebody texts in and says, you're our dork horse, Pat, because I said dork horse instead of dark horse.
So I didn't know what the rules were. Like, if you say something like that, should I torch you? Should
For
I just
sure.
let it all sail across?
Now, just be warned, though, that as soon as that opens the door for it to come right back to you, so it's whatever you want to do.
Okay, Bort.
Okay, Pat. And then I replied back. Okay, well, a dork horse, kind of like a Shetland pony with glasses. That's what I'm imagining now. That's
I was going to say, and you have glasses, but I also have glasses. So let's just let that one go.
Little bit more rapid fire. Cody Eakin scores a goal. Sonny Milano had a couple of really nice moments in the game as well. One really nice offensive shift there where he created a couple of things. They played on a line flanking Connor Zeri on Sunday night. Eakin scores the goal, had another opportunity. What do we make of the two PTO forwards that got into action on Sunday night?
I don't know how you saw it. I liked Eakin a bit more, and that's not because he scored a goal, because the goal was as garbagey, I think, as you can get, sort of a second or third chance. Who knows what kind of chance rebound it was, but it was kind of a broken play on a bad turnover by a rookie defenseman.
Yeah, Backlund kind of forced the bad turnover.
Yeah.
And then faked a slap shot. Backlund had the first opportunity. It was stopped, and then Poirier missed it and kind of touched it to Eakin, and then there's Eakin. It's like, it's the easiest goal I'll score.
I liked Eakin's work in the neutral zone mostly. Backtracking, progressing the puck up. Sonny Milano was noticeable in spurts to me, but there were other times where you kind of had to go out of your way to try and find him, whereas Eakin, for me, was more of a consistent driver at both ends of the ice. Both of these guys are guys that are playing for contracts. You're going to get the desperation out of both of them, but for me, it was Eakin that shone just a little bit brighter.
I noticed Milano more. Eakin scored the goal and had the other opportunity. I still worry a little bit about the mobility on Eakin, and a couple of times that looked a little evident on Sunday. Milano was always like, I saw him mostly in the offensive zone, and he seemed to always be around the puck in the offensive zone. He had the couple of nice opportunities. He really has confidence with the puck on his stick. Yes, there's still work to be done, I think, with his game away from the puck, but I liked him with it, and I liked his battle level in the corners. I thought he didn't shy away from anything. So I thought Milano, for me, was a little bit more noticeable than Eakin, but I for both of them, in their PTO debuts in the preseason, I think they both did themselves favors. I think they probably both took a step forward if they're trying to, well, they definitely, not if they are trying to earn contracts, but as they're trying to earn contracts.
And I don't think they're necessarily in competition with each other. They are playing on the same line for right now, but very different roles projected for those two players, I think, in different situations. They just happen to be on the same line, you know, sharing the same centerman, put on against the same opposition, so naturally they're on the ice together. They're both, you know, trying out to be NHLers this year, so their natural comparison is there. But I think all things considered, you're looking at Milano to play a top six role, top nine role, and you're looking at Eakin to play, you know, in your bottom line, you know, depth forward 13-14, that kind of situation. So in saying that one, to me, looked better than the other, let's just continue to keep in mind that they're going to be projected to play different roles. It's not this guy or that guy on the second line for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, 100%. I liked Connor Mackey a lot. I thought he was solid and poised. He played most of the night 5-on-5 with Mackenzie Weegar, and I just thought Mackey was solid. Nothing spectacular, nothing that really jumped off the page offensively, but defensively I thought his angles were good. I thought he played it well in terms of ceiling on the boards. He got a lot of defensive responsibility with Weegar. I thought for a guy trying to make the team on the back end, I thought Mackey had himself just a really solid, poised, reliable game. Nothing spectacular, but I think being steady and reliable is going to be his ticket to making the team. So I thought that he checked that box in his first preseason game.
The best thing you could probably do for Daryl Sutter in a game like this, if you're a defenseman, is to not be noticed and not be seen from your own center ice line in. Because if you're getting noticed, the chances are, as a defenseman, if you're getting noticed on the ice, more times than not, it's because you're doing something wrong out there. You're getting caught. A player burns you. You make bad reads. You take bad angles to the puck, so on and so forth. So for Mackey, I didn't notice him much, and I think for him that that's a good thing.
You know who I did notice, good
Go
and
on.
Bad? Jeremy Poirier.
Daryl, too.
man, is he fun to watch. Here's this was Julian at The Athletic asked a couple of questions to Daryl postgame on Sunday about Jeremy Poirier, who got some power play time. He got lots of time out there at 5-on-5 as well. Here's what Daryl thought about Poirier's preseason debut.
It's good with the puck. Got lots of work to do.
Sorry to follow up on the last question. When you say Poirier has a lot of work to do, what does he need to do?
Sticks, angles, checking, important parts of the game.
So I don't think that we're talking about a guy that is imminently going to make the NHL team. I think the American League is where he's headed, but had an assist. He was plus one, played over 16 minutes, 3 shots, 5 attempts, 1 giveaway. He was just... I mostly noticed him in a good way in that he has all the offensive balls in the world. Like, he, preseason game in the NHL, QMJ, doesn't matter. He is ready to, he's ready to jump into the rush. He is ready to be an offensive difference maker if he can be. A couple of times he was up there leading rushes, or like, he was like, holy, this guy is not shy on offensive confidence from the back. And he skates well. He's gifted with the puck. He's confident in that regard. You know, there were definitely times where that came close to catching him or putting him behind the eight ball, putting him in a bad spot. He did make the really poor decision and kind of left his D partner or hung his D partner out to dry on the breakaway where he threw the puck across. And, you know, everybody will look and say, well, Colton Pullman gave it up. It's like, not really. Like, there wasn't much he could do. It was a kind of a hand grenade of a pass in a bad spot, and it led to a breakaway, even though the last guy to touch it was Pullman. But I'm other than that, I mostly enjoyed positively what I saw from Poirier. There is a lot there in terms of the high-end skill. He is one of the most intriguing guys in this organization.
Absolutely. He was a third-round pick in 2020, but he was a top-five defenseman offensively from his draft class. He's got elite, elite offensive skills. Talking to Ray Edwards, in summer camp, rookie summer camp, he's going, this kid is elite. Like, he does stuff with the puck that I can't teach. And when your skills coach is telling you that, you know, you do something with the puck that I can't teach other guys to do, that's a big plus. But at the same time, he also said that Poirier's got a lot of work to do. And he's got a lot of work to do primarily in his own end, primarily in, as Daryl Sutter said, checking, stick work, defensive reads, controlling gaps. He's going to be real interesting to follow in the AHL this year, I think, because he's a guy that can quarterback a number one power play right now at the minor league level. It's just rounding out the warts of his game, the defensive element. Center ice forward, look out. Center ice back,
yeah,
maybe look out.
Well, and he's done a lot of work on his defensive game. That's just got to continue. Playing for Mitch Love and being on a team where the top of the coaching mountain is Daryl Sutter, I think that's only going to help him get better. I think there's going to be some harsh learning curves at times for Poirier now that he's going pro. But damn, he has got a lot in the toolbox in a good way, and he was fun to watch. That's the thing that jumped out to me. He was just fun, and he's exciting. And again, I'm not trying to sit here and sell you a bill of goods that he's in the mix to be. There's no way he's in the mix to be on the NHL roster to start the year. But he's a guy that I'm really curious to see how many more preseason games he gets before Stockton camp starts, or even as Stockton camps, or not Stockton, as the Wranglers camp starts. It'll happen many more times. And then if he can take that into his first American League season and build on that. So I'm excited. He is an exciting prospect. I'll say that much.
And being around pro defensemen, being around defensemen that are 3, 4, 5, 10 years older than him, it's just going to help his development. Like you said, the learning curve is going to be steep with this guy. He's already got all the skills that you can't teach.
Yep.
So now if you can teach him the skills that he doesn't have, there's a lot of upside to him, especially as a third-round pick. Like, if you can get a guy that has that kind of upside in the third round of the NHL draft, you're doing well. And if he turns into something, it means your development team did something right too.
How about the, easing guys in? Mackenzie Weegar played just over 18 minutes last night. Mackey played just under 19. You know, Hannafin played 22 and a half, so easing guys in. Oh, and then there's Rasmus Anderson. Preseason game number one, plays 26 minutes. Well, welcome to training camp, Ras. Now, there was the one shift on the power play where Ras had a bit of a rough go. He brought it up himself, so we're not even kicking the guy in the teeth. He came out for Monday media availability, and I just asked him what it was like getting into game action. He brought it on himself. He opened the door for himself. Here was Ras. He fanned at a couple of one-timers. That's all. He had one shot, just healed it a little bit, and then about 15 seconds later completely whiffed on one. And, of course, his teammates were going to be crushing him about that. Here was, again, all I asked Rasmus was, how did it feel to – get back on the ice? What was it like to play a game on Sunday night?
It was all right. A little timing wasn't there, as I fan on a few one-tees, but other than that, it felt better and better the longer the game went on, and it was good to get two wins, and now we keep building.
Even though everyone's trying to knock the rust off, when you whiff on a couple on the same shift, do you hear it from the boys?
Yeah. I haven't seen Manji today, thank God. So at least that's something good.
so that was Ras. He did again. He brought it. I wasn't going to bring it up, and then Wes saw the open door and went right through it. And then Wes asked Andrew Mangiapane, of course, right at the end of Mangiapane, his media availability. By the way, Mange back on the ice with teammates for the first time, so he is now a full participant in camp as we expected. We told you he was a couple days away, so he's back on this Monday. That's good news, getting closer to making his preseason debut, but Mange also saw that even though he wasn't playing in the game.
To see them? Two in a row on the one power play. That was very good. And fanned right on it, right? Those ones?
Yeah. Did you let him hear it today?
No, I didn't see him today here, so we're kind of separate groups, so maybe I'll save that one for later.
And even Backlund was all, Backlund was giving Rasmus the gears.
Those were fun to watch. made us laugh a little bit on the bench, so. First one I was like, oh boy, and then second one was really, yeah. Going on here.
poor Ras. It's the preseason for everyone.
Oh man, what's going on here, Michael Backlund? That wasn't very good, Andrew Mangiapane, and of course Rasmus Anderson fanned on a few one tees.
Yeah. Ooh. Still played 26 minutes. Yes. I did find we won't hear it today. We'll talk a little bit about this maybe on Tuesday's show. But I actually found it really interesting listening to Ras today outside of him self-owning himself. I thought it was interesting just to hear him talk about what he's trying to accomplish this year, how he wants to shoot the puck more, add a little bit more offensive creativity to his game, a little bit more offensive element to his game. And he certainly wasn't being eased back in. 26 minutes is what he played in night one of the preseason. He just continues to grow into one of the most important players on this team. He made up one half of one of the NHL's best defense pairings last year. And I still believe, and I've believed this since the first time he got into NHL fringe action, sky's the limit for this guy. And I still fully believe that. And I think that, give him a few more preseason games. I think those one-timers will be a little bit more crisp. Timing will be back just a little bit more.
It feels like he's been around forever, but he's only 25, turns 26 in October. You talk about progression in some of the younger players, the prospects that are coming up, the development they've got to do. There's still room for defensemen like Rasmus Anderson and Noah Hanifin to grow. They're still relatively young in the grand scheme of things. Defensemen tend to peak a little bit later. He talked a lot today about, getting more pucks on net and contributing more offensively and just having a more of a shooter's mentality. This is a guy to me that has an incredible shot. He has a career 3.2 shooting percentage, but he can really wire the puck. And to me, he's going to be one of the keys on the Calgary Flames power play this season. As it comes, we don't know necessarily the personnel that'll be there, but I think we see a little bit of a revamp in strategy, of attitude, of approach. And if you have him shooting and focusing on shooting and setting up that one-timer from up top, he's going to be a big part of this team on the power play and also at 5-on-5.
It is Flames Talk Hour 1 on this Monday with Aaron Vickers of Daily Hive. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're underway, and you can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. We encourage you to go hit subscribe. Never miss an episode wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
So do we have a new softish, perhaps firm deadline for a Mackenzie Weegar contract extension? Well, perhaps we do. Hour one of Flames Talk rolls on with Aaron Vickers of Daily Hive. My name is Pat Steinberg from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge. We're just over 2 weeks from the start of the regular season. So I believe it's 18 days is the math you did. I trust yours more than mine. So
I wouldn't.
Have you ever heard me? Like, it is... I'm about 40%. If I do math in my head, I'm about a 40% hit rate. 4 out of 10, I'll get it right. The other 6 out of 10, it's like, nope, Pat, that's forgot the decimal point there.
You just got that one right, though.
Yeah, well, that one I had to do the calculator on. So here's the, by the way, you can get us wherever you get your podcasts. Aaron Vickers, Daily Hive. Pat Steinberg with you. So just over 2 weeks from the start of the regular season, 2 weeks from Thursday, and perhaps that is a floating deadline or a firm deadline even for a Weegar extension. He, of course, is currently in the final year of his contract, has one more year left before he's eligible for unrestricted free agency. This was on the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick, available wherever you get your podcasts as well. The latest edition dropped on this Monday, and maybe that is the case. Maybe the start of the regular season is a deadline for Weegar.
From what I understand right now, I believe Uyghur's goal is to say, we have this done by the start of the season, or we stop talking. I think there's, you know, even he said at the beginning of training camp that there was reason to believe it was worked out, and I do think the two sides are taking a run at it, but from one of the things I've heard is that his preference is, once the puck drops, shelve it. I also do wonder about Daryl Sutter, too. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets an extension too.
Oh, just that little part in the end as well. Thanks, Elliot. Okay, that's another thing that... Oh, Elliot just threw an extra little topic at us right there. We thought it was going to be Weegar. And then there's that, the Daryl part in a second. But first on the Mackenzie Weegar front. Does that mean the next 18 days or so, 17 days or so, are we on high alert? A lot of times deadlines spur action. And if that's the deadline and Mackenzie and his camp say, okay, we really want to do this, which I firmly believe they do. We really want to get something done. And we know the Flames want to get something done. Okay, let's get this done before October 13th. Let's set a deadline. And once the season starts, let's maybe shelve talks a little bit or dial them back a little bit. I wonder if because that might be the case, a lot of times we've seen it before with all kinds of negotiations. Hell, Sunday, yesterday, was the three-year anniversary of Matthew Tkachuk signing his three-year deal, which, again, was brought on by a deadline. The regular season was approaching, and they finally got it done. I just wonder if a deadline like that could accelerate the process that much more.
I would think so, especially with what we've seen in Calgary over the last 365 days or so, give or take a day or two in either direction with the extension possibilities for a guy like Johnny Gaudreau. You talk about Matthew Tkachuk and where they were a year ago in their contracts. Now you've got somewhat of a similar situation here. I'm not going to call them identical by any stretch, but now you've got another player that is, I don't want to say threatening. Threatening is not the right word here, but would rather not talk contract in season. So you're going to run into a situation where you've got an unrestricted free agent defenseman who many feel can be a number one defenseman in the NHL or is a number one defenseman in the NHL, who could just slowly tiptoe towards, well, maybe I'll just, you know, take a peek at what unrestricted free agency looks like. So I get it specifically from Uyghur's camp, where you've got this opportunity to set this soft deadline and see what happens from there. Now, I think we should be on high alert regardless because of how openly Uyghur's talked about this extension and wanting to get it done. So I don't think this makes me any more nervous isn't the right word, but more aware of this happening. But the soft deadline, or maybe, you know, Uyghur's camp considers it a hard deadline. Definitely, I would be on the verge of expecting something to happen before the opening season
starts. Guys, just 8 times 6.5. I've solved it for you.
And if you take 10% of that broker fee,
I don't even need a matchmaker fee. Like, okay, you know, but steak dinner, something like that. You know, gift certificate, something. Like, I'm fine with that.
Just, Rolex?
No. Do you think how much of a fraud would I look like wearing a Rolex? You'd be like, okay, buddy, we know that you don't make that much money.
I don't know what to bury you with on this one.
Rolex with a plaid shirt. Yeah, that'd look really good, bud. Yeah, you look. My style has been the same since I was 14. T-shirt, graphic T-shirt and jeans. That's just I have no depth. No repertoire. I don't know how to dress. When I was in France, I was walking around. I'm like, holy bleep, people are stylish here, and I was like, I don't have the brain power to be able to be that stylish. So you have to think about where. No, okay, Levi's fit good, awesome T-shirt. Nice T-shirt-ish. It's got a decent graphic on it. Done. I'm done. Throw a hoodie on it or a Lulu plaid, and I'm good. So I would not look good with a Rolex is the point I'm making.
I don't know what it says about me when I complimented you on your appearance today after you just buried yourself.
You just like the Guinness shirt, the graphic Guinness tee.
Now that I know that you casually snuck in that's a Lulu shirt you're wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another two style points.
Look at you. You're all stylish. You've got the cardigan on. So you could be in Europe and you could be like, oh yeah.
I do like the wheels.
The wheels are good. Yep.
Yeah.
Good. Anyway, the point of that is just 8 times 6.5. Get it done. Uyghur, you're here for 8 years. Tree, pay him 6.5 per season. Lots of signing bonus money. Bam, it's done. You're welcome. I've solved it. For you both.
I am curious because you make it sound so easy. I do wonder where the Uyghur camp versus the Brad Sure Living camp is on this negotiation. I wonder what the hang up is right now because you make it sound so easy.
I'm guessing the no move stuff, there's a lot of wrangling there. And I would imagine that the signing bonus stuff, if you're the Uyghur camp, you're like, well, you just signed his boy Huberto to $84 million, and like two-thirds of that is signing bonus money. What type of signing bonus money are you willing to pay up front? So I wonder if there's a little bit of that going on. Those would just be my guesses in terms of what would be holding it up. We'll see. What about that Daryl nugget, though?
Talk about bearing the lead there, right?
Elliot just at the end goes, yeah, I know, Uyghur this, Uyghur that. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if they give Daryl an extension. I have been fascinated about what happens at the end of this season on the Daryl Sutter front since the day Daryl Sutter was signed and we found out that he had a 3-year deal, including the rest of that shortened season. I was like, what does that final year look like? You know, are we talking about this guy retiring at the end of his 3-year contract? Does he want to coach more? Is it time to hand off to one of the heir apparents, whether it's Kirk or Huska? Like I've always wondered. If Daryl wants to keep coaching, if Daryl wants to still be going through it, and I remember he's talked a couple of times about, you know, I don't do this unless I really believe there's a chance to win because it's a lot of work. The sacrifice, the sacrifice on the family and the home life and all that type of stuff, it's immense. You put a lot into being a head coach in the NHL. So if he wants to keep coaching, then I think the extension is pretty easy. You extend the guy if you're the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, you really wonder how the process is going to unfold.
This ain't Bob Hartley.
So Daryl decides one morning, he wakes up, yeah, I'm signing on for another year. Does he just pass Tree in the hallway and go, yeah, and Tree goes, okay, and then, you know, strike a signature and then it's done? Like, is that how easy this process is going to be if Daryl decides he wants 1, 2, 3 more years of being the Calgary Flames coach? Because from the outside looking in, it should be that easy. You talk about Mackenzie Weegar's contract being that easy. I got to imagine that a Daryl Sutter extension and as head coach of the Calgary Flames is just as easy and just as welcome from both sides should Daryl decide that he wants to give it another go.
Be a no-brainer to me to bring him back. And I wasn't trying to throw shade necessarily at Bob Hartley, but remember, Bob won the Jack Adams in the 14-15 season. And I don't know. It was pretty clear at the time, and even more obvious now, that that team was way above their skis. Like, they were over their skis, above their skis is not the right term. They were way over their skis, and that was just not what they actually were. They were a team that rode a lot of unsustainable percentages that year, made the playoffs, won a damn round, but everybody was talking about, are they going to regress? But because of the situation, because they had gotten off to such a good start, it was Tree's first year with an inherited head coach. It's kind of like, yeah, I don't really have much of a choice. I got to sign this guy to an extension. So sign him to an extension. They were awful the next year, and they made the decision to go in a different direction. I don't – like, this is not that situation. This is Daryl Sutter, who's coaching a team that they were legit for where they were last year. There weren't any false flags. There weren't any there weren't any misnomers. They were an elite team in so many metrics during the regular season last year. And so you don't get the sense that this is a team poised for a significant amount of regression. So that's the only reason I brought up Bob Hartley, is that this one just seems like a no-brainer to me, whereas the Hartley conversation was a little bit different in my eyes.
Yeah,
that would be the last coach that got an extension in this organization, because Gulletson lasted two. We know what happened with Bill, and we know what happened with Jeff Ward. So that's the last guy that truly got an extension as a head coach of the team.
Yeah, and I always kind of viewed the Daryl Sutter hiring as the Calgary Flames wanting, identifying, needing a shift in culture from their team, and maybe a little bit within the organization that extended outside just the 23-man roster as well, whether it be coaching staff, whether it be prospects in the system, just the whole general approach. And I wonder, as Daryl comes to the end of what will be his third season this upcoming season, I wonder if he'll be satisfied with the job that he's done in terms of putting this organization on the right course, where he feels comfortable turning it over to a Kirk Muller, like you said, or Ryan Huska, or if he thinks that he's still got some work to do on that front, or simply if he still wants to chase a Stanley Cup, because he's an elite head coach. He's a Jack Adams winner for a reason. So I really think all the cards are in Daryl's hand in terms of what he wants to do with his future.
This text says, I think Daryl's contract's tied to Tree Living's deal. If Tree re-signs, so does Daryl. If not, the new GM will pick his guy. That comes from Randy. Brad's also in the final year of his deal. I know he addressed that last week. Was asked about, is there any distraction? I don't think so. I think that, you know, we're in a scenario where both guys have expiring contracts. But I think that with where this team is right now, with what Brad just did in the offseason, I don't think you allow a general manager to execute the trades that he made and sign the contracts that he signed. If you're like, well, we don't think this has been your final year. What lame duck do you allow to make that trade with Florida, or sign an $84 million deal with Jonathan Huberdeau, or a $49 million deal with Nazem Kadri? Like, I'm not worried about that type of stuff.
Or potentially an 8-year deal at
with Mackenzie Wieger.
Yeah. So I don't necessarily think it's both or none. I don't think that's the situation, but I'm not really I don't expect any shocking news that's going to blow the top off my head in terms of either of these two men's futures with the Calgary Flames.
And honestly, I don't, at this point, what reason would there be?
No, exactly.
To move on. The way that the narrative around this team has changed since Daryl came in, since Brad made that call, and specifically since some of the moves or non-moves have happened in the last two off seasons, I don't really see a reason to even be having a conversation about why you'd need to be changing regimes at this point. I get it. It was a hot conversation, and I probably was a little too guilty of buying into it following the just absolute, what did I call it last week, the hellscape of the 56-game season. Yeah, I was probably a little bit guilty of buying into that because it was so bad. But I think in retrospect, I was wrong to do so, because in retrospect, it was such a stupid, unprecedented year where I think buying too much into those 56 games was silly. Not to say that you don't put some stock into it, but to put everything into that and make those type of organizational decisions based on that 56-game campaign, I think that would have been foolish in retrospect, and so yeah, I think that I probably bit too hard on those narratives coming out of that season.
I forgive you. It's a mistake a lot of us made. So you're off the hook here.
Oh, thank goodness.
You've officially been
I was so worried.
Admonished of your
absolved.
Guilt. Absolved of your guilt on that front. And, yeah, there it is. That 56-game season was just bizarre all the way around, from top to bottom, from player to coach to media covering it. Let's just be glad that it's done and over with, and we're back in dressing rooms.
I'm going to go do some Hail Marys as we wrap things up on hour one of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers from Daily Hy-Vee's on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and you can get Flames Talk wherever you get your podcasts: Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Go hit subscribe wherever you get them.